श्री द्वैत श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोपीनाशायन की जय वृंदावन की जय तुलसी नारायण की जय समवेत भक्तवृंद की जय ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Shri Padaya Krishna Prasadaya today. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Ji Namo Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachani Namo Sese Sundari Pasa Chari Satari Vande Om Shri Guru Shri Mitapada Kumam Shri Guru Vaishnava Shri Bhaktivedanta Nanu in London, and we're going to be looking at Bhakti and the Yoga Letter, Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, and today we're doing texts 1 through 7, an overview of the two paths. What's the difference in the goals? What's the difference in the process? What's the nature of the path? How does one get delivered? What are the qualifications? Tomorrow's class I think you'll find the most interesting. There we're looking at the relationship. What's the relationship between the yoga ladder and bhakti? And then the last text 15 to 20 are the qualities of one who has attained peace. That was my journey to creating this seminar was that I first discovered that there were many different descriptions of the progression to Krishna consciousness in the Shastras and by the Acharyas. So far I've identified 18 different ways in which one's journey from being a conditioned soul to being a self-realized, God-realized soul is described. And not all of these ways can be correlated neatly with one another. Just like when a person physically grows up, so there's physical maturation, a mental maturation, social maturation, they all match up. If you describe how a person matures socially and how a person matures physically, you can't necessarily match the stages. They don't necessarily happen at the same time. So the different ways of describing the progress of Krishna consciousness, they're different ways of looking at the same thing. They're looking at it from different angles. So I was planning on making presentations and hopefully eventually books on each of these processes when I heard a class given by Dvijamani Das, disciple of Ravindra Sriprabhu over Skype, and he was talking about Bhagavatam 325.25, about the association of devotees, Satam Prasango Bhavagirya Sambhagam. And in the process of speaking about that verse, he had a three-part seminar on it. He started talking a lot about chapter 12 and the progression described in the middle of chapter 12. And it was opened up a whole new world for me. And I spent a lot of time consulting with him and other Vaishnava scholars and looking at the commentaries, particularly Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur and Baladeva Vijayabhushana. And I was very happily astonished and surprised at what I found and how deep Bhagavad Gita chapter 12 is. So I don't know if we'll do more than touch the drop in the ocean of sweetness, but it's quite extraordinary. One of the most amazing things I found by doing this research was what I've been suspecting for a long time, and that is that we often don't understand what bhakti yoga is. And often thinking we're performing bhakti, we're actually trying to do something on the yoga ladder. And sometimes we're trying to mix it. And therefore our progress is not as fast or as joyful as it could be. I also felt that understanding this was very helpful in our preaching, especially since more and more of our devotees are preaching through various forms of yoga. How to connect the different kinds of yoga to bhakti. And finally, what started my surprise and started my interest was the position of Varnashram in bhakti and the yoga ladder. What is the function of Varnashram and how is it used? That's something we'll be looking at tomorrow. And Krishna willing, you will all get handouts on that too. So I have two of these slides I've made into handouts. So today we're going to be looking at text 1 through 12. I'll just first read through the English of those. If you have a Bhagavad Gita for these seminars, that's helpful. If you can look through the Bhagavad Gita in preparation, and that's also very helpful. If you want to do preparation for tomorrow's seminar, I would suggest that you not only read through text 8 through 12, but you also read through the purport to text 20. Now, although 20 is in the last section, Srila Prabhupada in text 20 summarizes 8 through 12. Okay, reading through text 1 through 7 now, just the English. Arjuna inquired, which are considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshiping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be the most perfect. But those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed, and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engage in the welfare of all at last achieve me. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service, and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Prita, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So what is the goal? Arjuna starts out by inquiring what's the best path, but the best path to what? So the goal is Chaima Sundara. That is the goal of all yoga. So there's one goal and two paths. So Arjuna is asking, what is the better way to reach the goal of spiritual loving service to Chaima Sundara? Should you start with bhakti from the very beginning? Or should you go through a step-by-step process that prepares you for bhakti and leads you to bhakti? This is the essence of Arjuna's question. Arjuna's not really asking, is an impersonal path ultimately the best? He's asking, should you first go through another path and then come to bhakti? Or should you start with bhakti from the very beginning? So we're going to look first at bhakti from the very beginning. What is the nature of bhakti? What is bhakti? Then we're going to look at the step-by-step process. And again, tomorrow we're going to see how they relate to each other. So today we're simply looking at them side by side. So what is the process? My avishya mano, mind fixed on Chaima Sundara. That is the essence of the process of bhakti. just like Rupa Goswami describes, that of all of the rules and regulations, the prime rule and regulation is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. And everything else is a servant of that one rule. So that's what Krishna is emphasizing, to have our mind fixed upon him. And how? With transcendental faith, with faith that is above the modes of material nature. Now later on in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 17th chapter, Krishna will describe faith in the various modes, because in the 16th chapter, Krishna says, well, there's the divine and there's the demoniac. And Arjuna's feeling is, well, you can't just fit everyone in those two categories. What about all the different varieties? And Krishna explains that there's faith in the different modes of material nature. But the faith that's required to always fix one's mind upon Krishna is a faith that's not even in the mode of goodness. It's a faith that's not even in the mode of goodness. It's a faith that's beyond goodness. So mode of ignorance means I am the center, I want to satisfy my senses and my mind, and I'll do it in any way. I don't care how I do it. I'll be happy to do it by breaking the rules of the Shastra, by breaking the rules of the government, by causing harm to other living entities. It doesn't matter. Mode of ignorance is vikarma, sinful activities. Of course, a person in the mode of ignorance might do something nice, might do something that was pious if it suited them, but their basic mentality is whatever there is for me, I don't care what I harm, how much I harm others, and I don't even care how much I harm myself. Then mode of passion is, I am the center, everything's for me, but I want to get things for me piously. I want honor, I want prestige, I want material enjoyment, but I'm going to do it by following the scriptures, by being a good person, by being an honorable person. Prabhupada says the epitome of the mode of passion is the king. You know, and of course, those of us living today, we might not think of kings or political leaders as pious people. But formerly, the kings, the Raja, was someone who followed the laws of Dharma. They wanted to be known as an honorable person. So that's the mode of passion. Prabhupada said, if you die purely in the mode of passion, you'll take birth as a king or a very rich person. Then the mode of goodness, one is still interested in me. I'm still at the center. But now I'm no longer interested in enjoying the material world, either piously or impiously. I'm interested in salvation. I'm interested in purification. I'm interested in liberation. I'm interested in finding peace. So all of those kinds of faith has me at the center. I'm believing in something with the idea that I'm going to gain some benefit for myself, whether impiously, piously, or in some sort of spiritual process. But the faith that's required to always fix the mind upon Krishna has to be above even the mode of goodness. It has to be a faith in something sublime. A faith that if I give everything to Krishna, with Krishna as the center, only then am I going to find the actual satisfaction for myself. Where Prabhupada would say, our real self-interest. As Jesus said, if you live your life for me, if you lose your life for me, you'll gain it, and if you live your life for yourself, you'll lose it. And this is the funny paradox in this material world. If I put myself at the center, I'm miserable. And if I put Krishna at the center, I'm happy. And easy analogy, you know, the hand has to put food in the body. If the hand forgets about its own happiness and thinks about the happiness of the stomach, the hand becomes happy. And if the hand is concerned with its own happiness, you just try to rub the carrots into your hands. So the hand will eventually wither. So this faith above the modes means that really I have to give food to the stomach for my own self-interest. And in a sense, one forgets about one's own self-interest. And what is the process? Nitya yukta upasate. To always, nitya, all the time, be worshipping Shaiva Sunya. This is actual bhakti. mind fixed on Krishna with faith above the modes, always worshipping the Lord. And then whatever one does is done for Krishna. And Krishna is the enjoyer of whatever I'm doing. So it was a very nice analogy that I've been explaining recently, and that to make this very simple, because people are thinking, how can I do everything for Krishna when I'm going to school? How can I do everything for Krishna when I'm working at the bank? What does that have to do with Krishna? Many times devotees think that the only way they can follow this instruction to do everything for Krishna is to give up all of their other activities and move into the ashram or just work for a devotee business. And in fact, in the beginning days of the Hare Krishna movement, most of us indeed did that. We dropped out of school, we left our jobs, many of us left our families, and came with one little suitcase and just said, okay, I'm going to work directly in the Sankirtan mission. But we find Srila Prabhupada was working as a pharmacist. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was working as a judge. And I remember in 1975 when Atimal Krishna Maharaj had quit being the GBC for India, and we no longer had head of spiritual sky. Karanda was no longer head of spiritual sky. And Srila Prabhupada said, Gopal Krishna is qualified to be either GBC of India or head of spiritual sky, but I don't want him to quit his job. And he worked for an advertising agency. He was advertising Clairol hair dye and I think Pepsi Cola. And Prabhupada didn't want him to quit his job. Of course, the situation became an emergency, and then Prabhupada said, okay, quit your job and become GBC of India. And that was a great benediction, of course, for India. But the point is that Srila Prabhupada did not have this kind of thinking that the only way you can do everything for Krishna is, you know, to sell prasadam, or to sell books, or to live in the ashram. So how do you do it? How do you do that? How do you dedicate your study of chemistry to Krishna? How do you dedicate your working in the accounting department of, you know, whatever, Tesco, to Krishna? So it's very, very simple. Actually, we're not working for Tesco. We're not going to Oxford University. We're not even married to so-and-so. The only person that we're working for is Krishna. I was just finished reading Lakunda Maharaj's book, Miracle on Second Avenue, and he talked about how in San Francisco they got this deity of Krishna, and the name that Prabhupada gave this deity means the boss. So Krishna is the boss. This is the idea of deity worship, that you make Krishna the boss. And Prabhupada says deity worship is especially essential for the householders. Who owns my house? Krishna. Just like we make reports to the deities, how many books are sold? We make reports to the deities of what's going on in the treasury. I know at least one devotee who every single thing that she does, everything that goes in or out of her life, she first shows to her deities. Any letter that she writes, any letter she receives, she reads to her deities, everything. That Krishna is the boss. So Krishna runs a transcendental company. Right? Mahaprabhu talked about it as a gardening company. That he was the chief gardener. But Krishna's running a transcendental universal company. And what is his product?
Bhakti.
Bhakti means? What's the fruits that Mahaprabhu is distributing? Love of God, Krishna Prema. So that's our product. We're trying to market it and sell it. You have to also market it. Prabhupada talked about book distribution, that people are not running up to you, generally. Sometimes it happens, but generally they're not running up to you. Do you have a book about love of God? Right? We used to, at Chicago Airport, that's how we distributed back to Godheads. You know, in our very funny looking poly cotton saffron clothes. Mismatch colors. Yeah. Here, sir, take a book about love of God. So maybe we collected $20 at the end of the day. So he's distributing, marketing, and selling love of God. And he's the company president. And we're all employees. Now, we also get paid a salary. And sometimes there's a controversy in Islam. Should devotees get paid a salary? The answer is yes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked for a salary. He said, Dasakori Paitan or Paitan means a salary. Deha Pranadana. What is the salary? The devotees also get to eat the product. Just like my son runs a prasadam business, so the employees also get to eat the prasadam. So we're selling love of God, and we get to taste love of God also. That's our salary. And Krishna also provides for us whatever we need to do our job. Whatever clothes, whatever equipment, whatever associates, anything that we need to do our job. He even gives us nice vacations. Right? Sometimes throws parties for the staff. So we might think I'm working for Tesco. We might think I'm going to such and such university. That's not a fact. We're always working for Krishna. We're always working for Krishna, especially those of us who take initiation. Who said, my dear Lord, from this day on, I'm yours, I work for you. And everywhere we go, and everything we do, and everyone with whom we relate, is for the purpose of furthering the company business. Somehow or other. That's its function. And everyone we work with, they're either a supplier of love of God, they're one of our vendors, or they're one of our co-workers, or they're one of our customers, or our potential customer. So your husband's not your husband, Krishna's your husband. Krishna's the only husband. And this jiva you're married to, maybe he's your supplier, maybe he's your co-worker, maybe he's your customer. And everyone you work with is like that. And that way you can dedicate everything to Krishna. How can I market love of God here? How can I market love of God here? Just like the devotees are meditating, how to sell Srila Prabhupada's books, and they set up these little smart boxes. Right? They have all different techniques. So let's try this technique. Let's try this technique. Let's try this technique. So dedicating everything to Krishna means whatever I do. Whatever I do is for Krishna's business. It's for Krishna's business. And not that I don't get taken care of. Krishna takes good care of his employees. Much better than any government, much better than any company, much better than any family. And simply what we're looking for is that Krishna is smiling. That Krishna is smiling at us. That we can go to Krishna at every moment and say, Krishna, this is how I'm marketing or selling love of God now. This is how I'm marketing or selling love of God now. And then Krishna's smiling. Well done, my good and faithful servant. So this is one of my favorite purports in all of Srila Prabhupada's books. Sometimes he chants, sometimes he hears or reads books about Krishna, sometimes he cooks prasadam or goes to the marketplace, sometimes he washes the temple. He does not let a single moment pass without devoting his activities to Krishna. Krishna, this is for you now. 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 Such action is in full samadhi. Interesting. What is samadhi? Generally, samadhi means that first, you purified yourself by yamaniya. Then you've put your body in the mode of goodness through pranayama and asana. Then you withdraw your senses from the external world. You no longer see or hear or feel anything. You go into a deep stage of trance. You enter into the fourth stage of consciousness, beyond wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. And in that fourth stage of consciousness, you fix your intelligence. Mind is quiet, and you fix your intelligence on the form of the Lord in the heart. And how many stories do we have in the Bhagavatam of somebody in samadhi who didn't hear or see anything? Oh, my dear sage, I want some water. No response. Get me some water. I'm the king. No response. Because he was in samadhi. So how do you go to the marketplace in samadhi? Prabhupada says you're in the marketplace. How are you there in samadhi? How do you drive there?
How do you see the road?
Different kind of samadhi. The samadhi of bhakti is not a mechanical samadhi, but a samadhi of love. A samadhi of absorption. That even though I'm externally doing so many things, in my heart, in my mind, this is for you, Krishna. This is for you, Krishna. This is for you, Krishna. It's explained that the yadus, they were apparently engaged in so many material affairs, but that was all happening automatically. Internally, they were fixed on Krishna. The nature of this path is it's easy and natural. It's who we are. We are living beings who are naturally absorbed in Krishna. Like a child naturally walks. And Prabhupada gives the example that we can worship the deity whom we can perceive even with our material senses. We can touch the deity with our skin, see the deity with our eyes. And you might say, well, there's difficulty on this path. It's not so easy. But Baladeva Vijayabhushan says, because the Lord is so blissful, because the Lord is so beautiful, because the Lord is so wonderful, one is always experiencing happiness, even if we deal with the difficulties on the path. One's not seeing the difficulties as austerity, because one's always remembering Krishna's beautiful form. So this also works conversely. If you're feeling difficulty, meditate on Krishna's beautiful form. I was just hearing this morning about Narada Muni preaching to Vyasadeva and saying the cure for all depression is meditating on the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. And Krishna personally delivers the devotee. Prabhupada says the devotee doesn't need to wait to become very experienced. You don't have to become expert at breathing exercises. You don't have to become expert at entering into trance. Just by thinking about Krishna, Krishna will deliver the devotee. Even if the devotee has not attained transcendent jnana, oh, now I can see the Brahman. Now I understand everything, all the workings of all living entities. No, even if you haven't achieved that. Even if you haven't properly done all aspects of dharmic karma. Even if we can't put you into any of the ashrams. Even if you say, okay, you know, I'm 35 years old, I'm divorced with 3 kids, and what am I? Doesn't matter. Even if you say, well, I don't know, I'm like Kshatriya or Brahmana or Shudra, I seem to be a little bit of all of it, it doesn't matter. Krishna will personally deliver the devotee. In the 8th chapter, Krishna talked about the path of light and the path of darkness. Without caring for the path of light, Krishna will deliver the devotee. Right? Pulling him up and putting him on the shoulders of Guruji. Come. So why is that? Because the essence of our entanglement is an aversion to Krishna, and the essence of our deliverance is love of Krishna. Therefore, if you go straight to love of Krishna, that goes right to the root of all of the anarthas, of all of the entanglement, of all of the illusion, and cutting down the tree by the root, there's no need to lop off the branches separately and let the tree die a slow death. You don't need any kind of previous qualification. This is a very important point, and please remember this point for tomorrow. You don't need to first attain the Brahma-Bhuta platform in order to practice bhakti. You don't need to first attain the Brahma-Bhuta platform in order to practice bhakti. You don't need to first attain the Brahma-Bhuta platform in order to practice bhakti. We think, I can't meditate on Krishna now because I'm not pure. Just a few months ago, one devotee asked me, I can't remember who's in New Zealand. It was on Govardhan Puja in New Zealand. One devotee asked me, am I allowed to think about Krishna before I'm pure? I've had people say to me, is it okay if I think about Krishna when I chant Hare Krishna? And I say, well, you think Krishna says, Lamana Baba Mad Bhakto, always think of me except when you chant. So many times devotees think, okay, I've got all these material desires. First I've got to make them zero. Then I can actually engage in devotional service. And they might even quote verses. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Sojitina Kantati Samasa Vishu Bhuteshu Mad Bhakti Mabhate Param. That's when I can actually start bhakti. They might think, well, if I start thinking about Krishna now in the beginning, it'll be all mixed up with material things. Yes, that's true. But the process of bhakti, Prabhupada says, is gradual and proportional. You're all full of material desires. Your spiritual desires are very, very small, little tiny seed under the ground. Just putting out little roots under the ground, you can't even see a little plant. And the heart is full of material desires, but you still start thinking about Krishna. And as you think about Krishna a little bit, material desires go down. As you think about Krishna a little bit, the material desires go down. And you're thinking about Krishna is mixed up with all those material desires, it's all right. It's the thinking about Krishna and the dedicating to Krishna that's burning up from the root all of the material desires. It's not that first I become liberated and then I can think about Krishna. I think about Krishna from the beginning. So we seem to understand this on one level. You know, we did the Harinam on Saturday night in central London, and there are the people in the restaurants, and there's dead cows sitting on their plates, and there's alcohol in their hand, and we don't go to them and say, my dear sir, first you have to give this up, and then you can chant Hare Krishna. Now, there is a person who's speaking like that, someone who was initiated by Prabhupada and started his own movement, and he's preaching like that. Don't chant Hare Krishna until you first follow the regular principles. Unless you're following the principles, you can chant the Panchatattva mantra, but not the Hare Krishna mantra. And in our general preaching, we understand this. We get happy when the person with the alcohol in his hand and the beef on his plate looks at the Harinam party and raises his hand and says, Krishna! But somehow many of us think that we can't do that. Okay, I can't think about Krishna. I can't think about Krishna's lila. I can't think about Krishna's form because I'm not pure. I hear this all the time. How can I become? I just heard this from a temple president recently, who's been in the Hare Krishna movement for over 20 years. And he said, I can't meditate on Krishna's lila. Why not? I'm not pure enough. Could you imagine our book distribution and go out with Krishna book? Excuse me, sir, are you pure? Are you on the Brahma Bhuta platform? No? Okay. How many could you imagine? We go to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, he says, how many books have you sold? Well, Srila Prabhupada, we didn't sell any today. Oh, why not? Well, many people wanted them, but they weren't on the Brahma Bhuta platform. So we told them, I'm sorry, you cannot read Krishna. All right, going up the yoga ladder. So what is the goal? So the goal of bhakti is? Anybody remember? Shanaka Sutra. So the goal of going up the yoga ladder, Krishna says, they at last achieve me. What does it mean by me? So Baladeva Vibhushana says this me is a form predominated by majesty. Like Narayana. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says this refers to the impersonal Brahman, and Prabhupada says this me refers to Krishna Vasudeva. By the way, I'm not going to try to reconcile different opinions, I'm just simply going to present them as different opinions. So there's an intermediate goal. See, what Arjuna is asking, please try to get this point very clearly. He's saying, do you first have to achieve liberation? Do you first have to achieve the Brahma Buddha platform? Do you first have to achieve, what's the word he uses here? Aksharam avyakta. Do you first have to get the unmanifested beyond the senses? And then after you've got that, can you then go to bhakti? That's the essence of Arjuna's question. So you could say, well, what's Arjuna asking? What is he saying should be the intermediate goal? Is the intermediate goal the self? Because the unmanifested beyond the senses could refer to me. I'm unmanifested beyond the senses. Or it could refer to the Brahman. So Baladeva, Jibhushan, and Ramanujacharya say that this Arjuna's question refers to the self. That first you realize the self, and then you come to bhakti, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Prabhupada say it refers to Brahman. So which is why Srila Prabhupada is translating this as those who worship the impersonal Brahman. But it could also be both the self and Brahman. So Srila Prabhupada also says that Arjuna is asking about realizing the self and Brahman. And it really doesn't matter because realizing the self will entail realizing Brahman, and realizing Brahman will entail realizing the self. Okay, how is the goal described? Whether you understand the goal as self or Brahman, or self and Brahman, as aksharam beyond the senses, avyaktam unmanifested, indefinite, all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, immovable, and fixed. This is the description of the goal. Now, if we were going to describe Shyama Sundar, Gokulananda, so he's also unmanifested, all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, immovable, and fixed. But in addition, he has his threefold bending form. Describe Shyama Sundar as a goal a little differently. So you might say, well, why would you want to do this? Why is Arjuna even asking this question? So they think, let me remove all my obstacles first and then perform bhakti, rather than remove the obstacles to bhakti by bhakti itself. Now we should keep in mind that many people on the yoga ladder do not even have consciously bhakti as their goal. They may have the intermediate goal of realizing the self or Brahman as their ultimate goal, whereas Arjuna is asking about it as an intermediate goal. Now again, I found that there are many members of our Hare Krishna movement who think exactly like this. They may think like this externally. Okay, let me finish up my household life, let me retire, let me quit my job, and then I'll go to Vrindavan, and then I'll really absorb myself in bhakti. I can't really do it now. How can I do it now? Now I have little kids, and now I have to go to work, and now there's this, and now there's that. Let me purify myself first, and then engage in bhakti. So people may think about it externally. Or as I've already said, they may think about it internally. First I have to get rid of all of my anarthas. First I have to become purified. First I have to realize the self, and then I can practice bhakti. I would say this is one of the greatest misconceptions that I find in the Hare Krishna movement. So it's very pertinent that Arjuna is asking this question. So Baladev says, why first realize the self? Some say that because meditation on Hari is firmly grounded when preceded by experience of one's own self, that attainment of Hari by means of that meditation is without obstacles. Now, there's some sense to this. It's not that this is simply some madness argument. If we can already control our mind, and if we already didn't have any distractions, if we were already very experts in these other kinds of yoga, yes, it would be easier to think about Krishna. Undoubtedly. And self-realization is symptomized by joyousness. And Prabhupada does explain, it's a fact. And this is, I think, why we often have so much confusion. This Brahma Buddha stage is necessary for entering into pure devotional service. One's thinking of Krishna, one's meditating of Krishna, is going to remain mixed with material topics. with material conceptions, actually until prema, what to speak of before Brahma Buddha. Even in Ruchi, even in Shakti, there's going to be some mix of material conceptions. Only at the stage of bhava does the spiritual reality manifest in the heart, free from the mind. At bhava, one enters into spiritual samadhi. At Shakti, one's samadhi is still on the platform of the mind. The question is not, is my meditation on Krishna going to be pure? Is my devotion going to be pure before Brahma Buddha? No, it's not. The question is, how do I get to that stage of purity? Okay, the process of the yoga ladder also involves worship. One cannot attain perfection even in the yoga ladder without some worship. And controlling the senses. So we just had an article submitted to Back to Godhead with this idea of controlling the senses by resisting temptation. That's not actually the bhakti process. The bhakti process is controlling the senses by having one's heart full of bhakti. But on the yoga ladder, you're resisting. You're saying, okay, I'm just not going to do that. Of course, some resistance has to be there if you're just going to be a civilized human being. But in bhakti, that's not our main process for how we're controlling our senses. We're not being vegetarian by just willpower. I'm sure that probably all of us here, we just don't have any desire to eat non-vegetarian food. It's not that we have a desire, we're resisting it. We just don't have it. Why? Because we're satisfied eating Krishna prasadam. It's not just an intellectual adjustment, and it's not just some act of willpower. But we're actually satisfied. Now, I haven't met very many devotees who are inclined to go out ball dancing and nightclub dancing, because we're satisfied with our dancing in the kirtan. We're already full. It's not that we're resisting it. But on the yoga path, one is resisting. One has to control the senses, and one has to see everyone equally. This is quite significant. Both in bhakti and on the yoga ladder, it is essential to treat all living entities with kindness and compassion, to not see a difference between friends and enemies. One cannot make progress in any system of yoga if one is saying, this is my friend and this is my enemy. And working for the welfare of all living entities, even working for the welfare of our so-called enemies. So even on the path of the yoga ladder, this is essential. Bhakti no tikkur sin and bhakti, namruchi and jivadvaya. One has to have a taste for the name and kindness for all living entities. So the nature of the path, Krishna says, it's troublesome. Remember the nature of bhakti it was?
Easy.
Easy and natural. And that even any sufferings in bhakti, the suffering doesn't go deep because of the beauty of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna. Whereas in the yoga ladder, it's very, very troublesome, very difficult. For a long time, it's all theoretical. In bhakti, even in the beginning, there is some practical experience. Even your first contact with bhakti, you get some taste of something genuine. Even if you're a neophyte, you can taste something in the kirtan, prasadam, in the books, in devotee association, in the deity, that you can see there's something different about this. It's genuine. I remember when I was in college, first really trying to practice Krishna consciousness, and I thought of it as the difference between speaking loudly and amplified voice. You can tell the difference in quality immediately, can't you? Now, how can you do that? How can you hear the difference between a naturally loud voice and an amplified voice? There's some difference in the sound quality. I may not be able to describe it exactly or know how I know it, but I know it. And I felt like that. I thought, wow, happiness in Krishna consciousness is something authentic. And my happiness I had materially was something artificial. And that was just a beginner, 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 beginner. It's not all theory. So even if one's not at the place where they're constantly swimming in an ocean of ecstasy, we've all had some practical, direct experience of Krishna consciousness. And the nature of the step-by-step process is one is not realizing the blissful aspect of the Absolute. Now, it may seem very blissful in comparison to material life. Realizing Brahman, realizing the self, may seem very wonderful because it's so peaceful. But if you're not really experiencing bliss. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, how can you, and Prabhupada also has a lovely 12.5, talks about the same kind of thing. How do I do it? And where do I begin? I'm trying to realize the unmanifest with my senses, but my senses can't touch the unmanifest. My senses can't even touch time, material time. I even have a hard time figuring out what is space. Material space, which you can understand with the ears, according to Bhagavatam. What is space? I understand space by what bounds it. How do I sense space? Even air is hard for me to perceive unless it's moving. Time, there's no sense that's able to access time. What is time? And I'm trying to go something beyond time, beyond space, with my senses and my mind. How will I do it? And I have to stop the senses by willpower. That's like stopping a river. Any of us who've tried to control our senses by willpower, does it work? After a while you get tired. Like holding an untrained dog by a leash, you know? And this also, devotees make this mistake and think that we're doing this process. We're not doing this process. We're not trying to stop our senses by willpower and by resistance. We will fail. And if you succeed, what will be the cost? You'll become hard-hearted. And we find devotees doing this. The way I'm going to control my senses, I'm just going to harden my heart. Or I'm going to become full of hatred and aversion. And we've seen so many devotees. And then, why are you doing it? Right? 5 years later, 10 years later. How many have we seen like that? Oh, those householders are all dogs. Oh, my dear former Maharaj, how is it you become a dog? We have to be honest. So don't do that process. That's not bhakti, that's the yoga ladder process. You might say, well, the Prabhupada says Jivanachari, he spit at sex life. Why? Because he was tasting nectar, not because he was averse. You know, if I have a nice plate of gulab jamuns and samosas and Bhaktivedanta Manor milk sweets, and somebody brings some 10-day-old bread, I say, what is that for? Naturally. Or even if you're just eating a big meal and somebody brings you something else, even your favorite food, because you're satisfied. Not because you have hatred, not because you're just repressing everything, so eventually explode like a volcano, either with anger or with self-gratification. So interesting that this path also needs worshippers. You know, because you can't really get out of the material world, even mechanically, without Krishna's will. Right? Otherwise, you'll just obtain suffering. And we see so many people take to this yoga ladder, they don't even achieve anything. They just say it doesn't work. And they go back to material activities. Maybe motive goodness or maybe more passion activities. But they need to find satisfaction again in the material world. Prabhupada says that this impersonal realization is trying to become purified by stopping everything. It's against our own nature. It's not really who we are. And there's even a danger of becoming an atheist. In fact, we find that many impersonalists are practically atheists. Impersonalism is the religion of the demons. Demons also have a religion often. And Sariputta discovered that in his book called Alien Identities. He discovered that the demons also have a religion and it is impersonalism. Then to start this path, you need to be qualified. To start bhakti, you don't need to be qualified. You don't need to have any qualifications. Actually, you need to have a qualification to start bhakti. The qualification to start bhakti is you have to be... what? You have to be a jiva. That's it. You can't start bhakti if you're a microphone. You have to be a jiva. Okay, but the qualification of going up the yoga ladder is you have to have piety. You have to have piety. And we'll go into this a little more tomorrow. You can't start the yoga ladder unless you've already become pious by following varnashram. You just can't. These people who are trying to engage in all kinds of yoga, they're trying to go straight to the top of the yoga ladder. They're trying to go to jnana yoga, which is all the way to the top of the yoga ladder. And they don't even have the qualifications for starting the yoga ladder. It just won't work. You know, it's like trying to enter a PhD mathematics course when you haven't even figured out that 1 + 1 = 2. You'll just be lost. I mean, maybe you can tell your friends, I sat in on the class. Well, what would you have gained? So here, this is very important. This says, first the socialist spiritual order, then piety, then karma yoga, then dhyana yoga, then one can meditate. Again, we'll look at this more tomorrow. So if you go up the yoga ladder, and if you attain the Brahma Buddha stage, how do you go then to bhakti? You have to get the grace of the devotee, and again, we'll discuss this more tomorrow. So once you realize the self, once you realize Brahman, you can only go higher by the grace of a devotee. And it's very nice in this purport, this is from 12.5, where Prabhupada said, at that point, your perfection may become difficult. How ironic. A person thinks, let me first become purified through the yoga ladder, and then I can take to bhakti. But first of all, it's very difficult to do. You have to use your senses to meditate on what's beyond the senses. You have to just resist the urges of your senses. And then, if you succeed, if you finally become perfect, now I'm ready to think about Krishna. Now I'm actually pure. Now I'll start bhakti. You've actually made it harder for yourself to think of Krishna, not easier. You might think, well, I've made it easier for myself. Now I'm going to be able to focus my mind. But now you've made it harder. Because Krishna is a person, and you become used to thinking about nothing. You become afraid of everything, push everything away, and resist everything. Thinking of Krishna's love is madness. You have everything tightly under your control. Love is losing control. Falling in love. Madly in love. And you're keeping everything so tightly under control, it can't run to Krishna. So the very thing which a person thought would facilitate their bhakti actually makes bhakti more difficult. Okay, tomorrow we'll go on to part two. So we have 5 minutes today. Part two is again the text 8 through 12. What is the relationship between the yoga ladder and bhakti? How do they fit together? And that, I like that as far as, I think that's the best part of this presentation. I found it to be most exciting. And then you have a handout, right? Yeah. 2 pages. So questions, comments? Yes. corrections. Yes?
You mentioned verse 9, you know, verse 27 of chapter 9, the upcorrection. It's not only is it difficult to remember Krishna whilst working, but even when we do, it seems a very mechanical and coarse process sometimes. Mm. How do we sort of overcome that?
He said, it seems like it's a mechanical and forced process sometimes to think about Krishna, referring to Yakaroshi. So it's difficult to think of Krishna, and it may seem mechanical. So that's true. Because we become habituated to thinking of ourselves. So in the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, it may seem that we're doing it under rules and regulations. This is called Vaidhi Bhakti. That, okay, I have to chant 16 hours because I'm told to chant 16 hours. I'm supposed to think about Krishna right now. And I believe that's one of the reasons why people say, well, I'm just not going to do it because it's mechanical and it's forced. Let me do the yoga ladder first, become pure, and then I'll think of Krishna. I think that's where it comes from. But anytime you learn anything, the beginning is going to feel like that. So there's, if I had a flip chart, I would draw. So there's four stages in learning anything. So, maybe some of you remember this because I've taught this many times before. The first is unconscious incompetence. Anybody remember the next stage? Conscious incompetence. The next stage? Conscious competence. And the last stage, unconscious competence. Can you guys remember? This is from education, okay? So first stage is what again? Unconscious incompetence. Next? Conscious incompetence. Next? Conscious competence. Next? Unconscious competence. So unconscious incompetence, you're in Maya, you don't know you're in Maya. You have no idea you're in Maya. You think you're fine. You think everything's great. Your life's great, you're happy, it's wonderful. I'm here drinking my beer at the pub on a Saturday night, and life's good. You know, got money in the bank, got my girlfriend next to me, got a good job, I'm doing great. Unconscious incompetence. Then conscious incompetence, oh, I'm in Maya. I'm not thinking about Krishna. Here I am at work, and I haven't thought about Krishna for the last 3 weeks. Oh my goodness. Here I'm chanting my rounds. I just finished 10 rounds. Never once listened to one word. Never once thought about Krishna. That is painful. It's uncomfortable. The psychologists call it cognitive dissonance, where there's a difference between what you want to be and what you are. Then conscious competence. You say, oh, I'm going to make a deliberate, purposeful attempt to do what I want to do. I'm going to think about Krishna now. Okay. It's Radha Gokulananda. What are they wearing? It's a Ekadasi. They're wearing the Ekadasi outfit. What kind of jewelry do they have? What kind of garments do I have? So I'm going to look at the deity, and I'm going to meditate on the deity, and I'm going to take this image and put it in my mind, and I'm going to remember, okay, Gokulananda's wearing this garland. I love garlands like that. It's got the white flowers, and in between, it's got the green and the red. And then at the bottom, there's the white, and he's got this pink turban with white and pink flowers, and I'm going to try to close my eyes, see if I can see the same image. And when I go out to work today around the university, I'm going to close my eyes, and I'm going to remember that. Maybe I'm even going to make a little alarm on my watch. And do something. I'm going to make a conscious effort. That's also uncomfortable. It feels mechanical. It is mechanical. But what happens if you do that? Now, even if you do some material thing like that, eventually, just like if you're going to play an instrument, eventually you can just play it. But we're talking about something that's natural. So this process works even if you're trying to do something unnatural, even if you're trying to do something like, you know, gymnastics or piano playing, which is not innate. It will come to a point that it just flows. You follow? So just like when I was being trained in public speaking, so we had a formula. Tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them, tell them what you told them. Give an intro, give three areas, give a conclusion. And we would drill that. You know, at first you don't even know that you don't know how to speak. You just think, and like and whatever. That's just how you're speaking. You become aware of it and then you train it. And I don't have to go through those steps anymore. It just comes. But I have years and years and years of training. You follow? So I want to speak of something that's natural. Bhakti's natural, like walking. So the little child learns how to walk. So the little baby, at first, they're not even aware that anybody else is walking and that they're not walking. They're unconscious, incompetent. And gradually they become aware, oh, other people are walking and I'm not. And then they're conscious competent. They make an effort to walk. And if you've ever seen a little baby walk, it's quite a torturous, long process. I've never seen a baby get up and run from crawling, you know. One day they're crawling, one day they get up and run away. I haven't seen it. With great effort, they hold on to something and they get up and they stand up for a couple of seconds. And they're all excited. Mommy and Daddy are excited and they call Grandma on TV. Put it on Facebook. And the next time they get up for another couple of seconds. And after a while, they stand up without holding on to anything. And after a while, they take a step. So we all went through that process. We don't remember. And now we just walk. Unless we have some disease. Right? When you walk, are you conscious of how you're walking? Are you thinking, I'm putting this leg here, I'm doing this, this muscle's moving, and you're aware. So bhakti is also like that. Now, we would all like to jump from the unconscious incompetence to the unconscious competence. We'd all like to say, okay, the moment I become conscious incompetent, the moment I become aware that I'm an illusion, I wanted to say, okay, Krishna, I straight with you, poof, I'm naturally thinking of Krishna all the time, in love. Now, that's possible, but it's very rare. It is possible. It's not impossible. But generally, we're going to go through those stages, and those two stages in the middle, where you're aware, I'm doing it wrong, I did it wrong again, I just offended a devotee again, I just forgot about Krishna again, I was just selfish again, I was just lust again, oh. But at least you're noticing it. Please be aware that when you notice it, that is progress. Don't think, if I notice how I'm an illusion, then I'm hopeless. The first thing that's going to happen is you're going to notice how much lying you're in. And then what do? You become depressed. Oh. Let me make a deliberate effort. Yes, it will feel awkward. Yes, it will feel mechanical. Yes, you have to make a deliberate effort. We'll discuss this a little more tomorrow in the relationship between Abhyasa Yoga and Agni Bhakti. And by making that deliberate effort, because it is natural, we will come to a point where it becomes more and more and more and more and more spontaneous. We're just naturally during the day, you're thinking Krishna. Naturally, Krishna will come into your mind and your heart when you're chanting like Krishna. That will come, but you have to do the practice unless you get some kind of vipassana. And at a certain point in progress, even if there's something material going on, you go naturally to Krishna. Whereas before that, even if you're in Krishna, you go naturally to mind. So that will come. Don't give up. Okay, thank you very much. I'll go ask Shri
Prabhupada.
Thank you for our technical team.